This is the Clarion Report, watching, reporting and counteracting global terrorism.
Clarion Project Editor Meira Svirsky, a very good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Howard.
So we wanted to catch up with you and hear what has happened in the world of terror during COVID-19. Initially, we saw some reports saying, ISIS saying, please, to their fighters, don't go near crowded places because you could get ill. But what has happened? How has this environment changed?
Well, first they did say that, and then they decided the ones who were infected should go to the crowded places. So that was the first thing that we heard from ISIS. To tell you the truth, it's very interesting that terrorism seems to be much lower in the world during COVID. We do hear random attacks in Europe. We haven't, and in America somewhat. Not so many attacks, but still police, you know, arresting people, and stopping attacks, things like that. So that's kind of the, you know, the good news. The bad news is that there was a very concerning study that was just done out of France that followed about 60 returning jihadists. Now, these were people who fought like in Iraq and Afghanistan because they wanted to follow them, obviously, over the years. And then they wanted to wait until they got out of prison and then see what was going to happen. So what they found, which was so disturbing, was that about 60% of them went on to commit further acts of terror once they got out of these long prison sentences. And before, all the studies had shown that only about 11% of the terrorists go on to commit acts of terror. So that was very concerning, especially because there's about, between now and the next 2 years in France alone, there's about 2,500 very serious jihadis who prison sentences are going to be up and they're going to be out on the street.
So it has, it's so interesting because, look, I guess as well is that there are a lot less crowds. People aren't, attending, places where there are a lot of people around. So opportunities for that type of attack are obviously severely reduced. Is it about that or is it about trying to figure out how best to terrorize in a new world?
Well, it's certainly that. Now, but what we are seeing in terms of all the protests, especially in America, is the Islamists, and I guess we could call them more like the soft Islamists, the ones who have the ideology but are waiting to, you know, just politically kind of, you know, get power and things like that, not necessarily the ones who are so violent, although the soft Islamists certainly have been caught sending money to the violent Islamists. They have joined forces with the, you know, the far left protesters, in terms of, you know, we've always seen this, that this whole concept of intersectionality, that this was something that the Islamists really jumped on. And, you know, with all their grievances and all their complaints of being victims, and especially against Israel, and especially pushing the anti-Semitic agenda and pushing the BDS agenda.
Yeah, because, and certainly we have seen that it's been a real concern, of course, for us and for people around the world, because it meant that for Jews and for supporters of Israel, there was no home in a place like this, because the anti-Israel agenda or the anti-Jewish agenda is so strong that this effectively was an exclusion from any from participating in these types of events.
Right. And it's only gotten stronger. When Black Lives Matter came on the scene a number of years ago, their platform actually had in it a pro-BDS stance. Now, they've since removed that. But you see from who they're aligned with and, you know, how the Islamists are really, like, partnering with them, that this is part of the Islamist plan, is to push this BDS agenda. And then, of course, I'm sure that the the more violent ones just thrive on the chaos. In a way, I can just imagine them saying, well, we might as well just sit back and avoid being arrested and killing ourselves because the
everyone
rest
else is
just,
doing it.
You know, self-disintegrating.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen certainly in South Africa or on our border, not directly on our borders, but in northern Mozambique, there's been a tremendous amount of activity from ISIS. Is this maybe a trend as well during this time that these terror organizations are looking to establish themselves in lesser known regions?
Well, we saw once the caliphate was pretty much disintegrated in Iraq and Syria that the remaining jihadists who didn't get arrested, they really, really fanned out. And one of the big places that they fanned out to was Africa. Mm. So this doesn't surprise me. And to tell you the truth, I think that, they do always try to do whatever they can. Now, they might have less resources because there's less money available worldwide, or they have, whatever thwarts their plans, but it's not for want of planning.
Right. Really, really interesting. How do you think this is all going to play out? Do you think ISIS will be re-strengthened? Will somebody else just pop up? How do you think this, there's no way of knowing, but if anybody is involved with this type of research, it's you. How do you think it's going to look in 6 months' time from a terror landscape perspective?
I don't think in 6 months we're going to see anything very much different than we're seeing now. I do think that as time goes on and we decide, like, what's going to happen with all these, you know, we still have the Kurds holding a lot of these ISIS people. How long are they going to be able to do that? You know, they've basically been abandoned by the West. They're attacked by Turkey, and they don't really have the resources to hold these people, to feed them and deal with them forever. Are they going to release them? Are the European countries going to be forced to take them back? That's slowly, slowly happening. I feel like under the radar that the European countries are taking them back. I don't think that people who are ideologically driven ever give up. We haven't seen this. And the study out of France certainly shows this. The programs, the de-radicalization programs across the board and across the world have been a failure. So our real only hope is what Clarion Project does concentrate more on than the countering violent extremism end of it is preventing violent extremism, to really get into the communities and try to do things to find, you know, identify the groups that are most vulnerable. And this is a big problem for kids now because everybody's still home. In America, it's become a political fight whether to open the schools or not open the schools. So the more you have kids at home, the more they're vulnerable to these online recruiters and things like that. But they have so many competing extremist ideologies right now between the cultural Marxists and the Antifas and the anarchists and the political arm of Black Lives Matter, which I guess we could call them also cultural Marxists because that's what they've identified themselves as. So all of these people are really, you know, preying on the young people. And if they don't get them when they're in high school, then they certainly get them, especially in America, on college campuses because all the professors are, have been this is the ideology that came from the 60s, and now those 60s radicals are the college professors.
Amazing that. Really, really interesting. It is 8:47. We do have to leave it there. I'm Howard Feldman, Mary Sversky from the Clarion Project. Thank you, as always.